Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Sober Indians Wednesday Night Live. This is Karen. I'm your host. And tonight we have Dawn join us again. Hi, Dawn. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Very glad to be here.
And
alive
it's an honor
and
to
sober.
Have you here. Yes, absolutely.
And I'm honored to be here.
Well, it's a great honor having you on the show tonight as well. Do you want to start, kind of pick up from where we left off the last time?
Yeah, I think I'll just kind of go over what I kind of said briefly, and then just see where the story goes here, because there's plenty
okay.
of them.
Okay.
All right. Well, hello, everyone. Okay, thank you, Karen. Good evening, everyone. My name is Dawn, and I am a recovering alcoholic addict, codependent, and I suffer from intergenerational trauma as well as trauma I incurred as a child, and and then later on as a mother. And for many years, I was victim to all of that. For everything that happened to me, I was a victim, and I had a victim mentality. If only I could blame it on somebody, which, there's plenty to blame. But my story, my lesson, I learned that blaming things leads me into a bad place, as my story goes. And so I left home when I was 16 years old. 25 years later, I returned home in a way that was where I appreciated being home, whereas I never did before. So I've spent the past 3 years here in the community where I was very sick, very addicted, and very alcoholic. I came back from my journey, a walk that started in 2016 on April 24th, which just passed. And that was 5 years ago, So 5 years ago today, we were on our way walking towards Arkansas from Oklahoma, which I am here in Indian Territory of the Cherokee Nation. And this is where I left out from, and I learned that how to pray for others. I learned how to pray with every step I took. And, while on this walk, I never thought about the program. I never thought about the 12 steps until I learned that we had a sponsor with us, and she was getting ready to celebrate her 8-year sobriety birthday because we were getting to our destination, which was Washington, D.C. And, I look back at all of these different stories that I have and how they weave around this alcoholism and addiction. I very well remember my first time in the rooms when I was 19. I went with this man who was in another part of Indian Territory here in Oklahoma. And I thought, he told me his story, and I thought, you know, that's good for you. It's not for me, you know. And the funny thing about this is that when I came across this man, this friend of mine, he only came in, and I mean, I believe that now looking back at it, I had just went through a long phase of depression. I was 19 years old. I had just went to jail for meth. The detectives told me if I didn't rat on everybody, then I was going to be in there for a while. They told me that, you know, they taunted me saying it's too bad that those twins aren't ever going to get to see their mom, and they're knowing that she's a stripper, and, you know, they were saying everything that just would break a person, you know. So sometimes I think about that childhood trauma, that intergenerational trauma. My people's been going through it for many years now. Even though I didn't think about it at the time, I stayed true to what I thought was of value, and that was keeping my mouth shut. And so I was in there for 14 days. And then when I got out, by the time that I got out, you know, I had made mention in the last time I spoke that I was in a bad, really bad relationship, and that I fled it. And I went to Tulsa, and I was working one job, and it wasn't paying enough. So I ended up, you know, working another job that I should have never worked. It just kind of took me to the place where after I had said that this was for this guy, but it wasn't for me, this is that part where I remember looking back now, and I would get off my one job and I would go to the liquor store and I would pick up a drink of whatever I could that, you know, and then go on to my next job. And I would drink that downlet on the way there just so that I could do the next job. Because a mother will do anything to take care of her babies. And that was me. So by the time I get out of jail at the, you know, the age of 19, you know, actually I was 21 at that time, I think, maybe 20. But anyway, that's not the point. When I got out, I was 19. But when I got out, their dad had got a hold of them and left to Lawton. And the only reason why I was at this house in the first place is because the meth dealer was fixing my car. And I couldn't get to my apartment. But, you know, we all got those sad stories, and I hear them all the time today, you know. And I'm really grateful that every time that I can look back at all those times, that I called out to a higher power as I understood it. When no one was there, when no one knew how I really felt and how scared I was, and yet I had to be a badass so that no one would mess with me. You know, I had been doing it for so long that it seemed real, you know. And, you know, it was, looking back at it now, it was a survival skill, you know, that doesn't benefit me today. It took me walking it out on the longest walk. It took me becoming willing to do something radically different, to start walking a different walk. And that's what the longest walk, declaring the war on drugs and or calling an end to drug abuse and domestic violence, that's everything that I have been affected from, you know. And on that walk, I got to see how much, how closely those two are related. you know, because when you see drug abuse, you see domestic violence most often the case. And that was the case with me. You know, it was 20 years later, you know, Mother's Day is coming up. And it was 20 years from my first Mother's Day that I remembered that I spent my first Mother's Day beat up with black eyes and busted lips and being told that it was my fault. And I was conditioned to say yes, you know. I was way messed up, and I was so wicked. For so long, I beat myself up for that. I didn't practice self-care for so long. And maybe, you know, I do recall I was always changing my hair color. I was always trying to get away from myself. And it was like, you know, no matter where you go, there you are. And, you know, to be told to stop running, you know, doing this walk at that time, the logic to me was kind of crazy because my daughter needed me. My family, you know, in that regard, I had just lost my grandson, you know. So I used that experience that I got back from when I was 19 and I got out of jail to an empty house. And he was telling me that I was never going to see my kids again. He was using my very words against me. I've learned a lot of lessons. And I'm really grateful that, you know, those days of depression that I experienced it. Because, you know, now when I go about, as I've walked, I've seen a lot of people. I'm not unique. And as unique as I am in my disease, in my way of thinking, that's not unique, you know. And it took this walk for me, you know. It helped me when I think about this walk to think about the red road because, you know, the only requirement was to stay sober, no hooking up. You know, this is a ceremony. This is something you're learning to do. It's a cultural approach to recovery. And, you know, it worked for me. And so when I went without seeing my kids for so long, I remember that hopeless feeling, that victim feeling, that anger feeling, and every time something like that happened, I just became a little less willing to try, you know, and I'm really grateful for the recovery that the gift of recovery has given me where I don't think that way. I don't feel those ways. I don't feel like a victim. I feel like I won. I feel like, you know, this is the walk. I didn't choose this walk, but it chose me. I put my heart into it, my heart and soul into it, and I got a healed one back, you know. I think about all of these things that used to so easily beset me, like these stories that I've been talking about, you know. These are the things that kept me drinking and drugging, you know, but through the gift of recovery, through my cultural practices, my prayer, my investment, I have invested heavily these past 5 years because my greatest fear is relapse. I don't ever, ever, ever want to lose this relationship, this connection. And that was what I was thinking when I was thinking about what I was going to talk about this evening. I went to 3 meetings, recovery meetings yesterday. One was virtual, the first one was, and then the other two. One was an AA, and then the other one was a sobriety. And, you know, it felt so good. It felt so good because, you know, those, when I was suffering the night before. There was a trigger, and it was, although it wasn't, you know, I wasn't wanting to go out and use, my character defects were becoming painful to me in a way that I felt that uneasiness, you know. And, you know, used to when I would feel that uneasiness, like going to jail, get my kids, you know, taken away, or my grandson passing away, or, you know, some kind of conflict, you know, I know how to deal with it, either fight or flight. And I've been dealing with that, like, I mean, I've been dealing with life like that all along, you know. I really appreciate today that, you know, as a lesson that I learned on the longest walk was, you know, how to take life on life's terms. Nothing seldom ever worked out on the walk like it was supposed to, you know. And that was when, I guess, the moral of the story is kind of like how things of the spirit is words, and things of the spirit you can't really, you know, control. And I also learned that if I am willing, I can be connected and reconnected. You know, I've met so many people in these past 5 years that this story is so inspiring. Or, you know, a lot of times I remember ones coming up to, women coming up to me and telling me their story for the very first time. They've never told anybody else, you know. And I also remember, you know, the time when the people of the community, you know, were so, they had their hands in the air. They didn't know what to do about the drug abuse in their community. And because of our presence, we were able to provide a way where the community could come together and we would talk about it together. You know, I'm very honored to have been a part of this group who circled around White Clay, you know, in South Dakota on the reservation, that alcohol, you know, and, you know, that was a result of activist Frank Lemire. And we met with him when we had went to Winnebago. And this was, you know, it's funny how this is working, because I just seen these pictures. I think I just posted them on the longest walk today. Anyway, so we had went to the Winnebago tribe, and we were talking about these things, about the problems in the communities with drugs and alcohol, you know. And I just cannot say and emphasize enough how much every experience, every single painful experience that I have ever went through my entire life, from losing my kids back to their abusive father, not having a vehicle, not having a way to work. I mean, when it rains, it pours, and me knowing it. And when they tell me, I can feel it. And I believe that they can look into my eyes and know that I do understand, you know. So we were at these gatherings. Our presence required a community, you know, invitation for the community to come together, you know. And at this one particular place, it was a nursing home where a lot of tribal elders were, and we went to tell them who we were, and they, you know, they got some cover. We shared our stories shortly, you know, as a group about who we are and where we come from. And, you know, before you know it, we're hearing these old elders, you know, and they're telling their traumas that they've never got the opportunity to say before, you know. And
yeah,
it's just been really, it has been really extraordinary of just how good and how big our Great Spirit is, that the Creator, and being connected to creation, how it can change our lives. You know, when I was defeated and always victimized, I was first a victim in my head. I had a victim mentality. And then coupled with rebellion, I mean, it was like, you know, by the time that recovery was for me, you know, I had already become a beast, you know. And then, you know, so now recovery is keeping that beast, you know, asleep, keeping that that one who is scared and will react at the drop of a hat, either fight or flight, you know, which is what happened the other night. I have some irrational thinking, you know, and that insecurity, and it just came out of nowhere, you know, and I couldn't sleep, you know, but recovery kicked in, recovery, you know, sense, order. I've recognized that through this walk of sobriety. Well, I'm going to call it well-briety because that's what it is for me, is that I have a cultural approach to my recovery. And, you know, I grew up very culturally oriented. I just got through my, I had a relative that passed away. And I can't say that that's not part of what was bothering me the other night, because it was the same day that I had heard this. And it was a cousin that we lost to COVID. And if you guys will remember the last time I spoke, that, you know, my fear of relapsing to drugs, alcohol, or catching COVID were all in the same category, you know. And so I was dealing with this on so many issues. So I can't say that that's not the source. But regardless, recovery kicked in, you know. The little affirmations just start flowing. Instead of all the negative things, it was like, you don't have to worry about where you're going to get your rent next month. You're laying in a very comfortable bed. There's nothing wrong with you. You are fine. Just, you know, and I really enjoyed that painful moment, because I remember clearly when all I wanted to do was just match my outside with my inside. So it was like I was constantly at war. And so yesterday, I wake up and, you know, I've continued on, you know, you feel that way. You feel a thickness in the air that, you know, when I feel that way, I withdraw. And I got to see that yesterday morning, you know, but then I turned on the little virtual meeting that I've been doing, and everybody was talking about exactly what was going on with me, you know. And then the next meeting, and I got to think about that, you know, about the times of me practicing self-care versus me not, you know. And so practicing self-care, even though, you know, I look back and I always thought I was taking care of myself. I thought it was, but, you know, on the inside, I was so ugly. I was so dead. I was so broken, you know. And I'm just glad that whenever I do these, my prayers, when I smudge, when I pray, when I drop tobacco with the water, when I sing, when I shake the gourd, you know, whenever I'm just trying to just be okay, you know, I got these things. In fact, like I was saying earlier, you know, whenever I was finding out that I was going to be speaking, get the honor of that, you know, that nervous energy, I just automatically had a desire to get everything in order so there would be nothing out of place in my thoughts. So practicing my culture, I was reconnected during the longest walk, 5, And it was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful life-changing experience. And it was funny because I got to White Post, Virginia, where we stayed. And the news crew, the local news crew came and did an interview. And me and this other girl, we were interviewed. And I watched that and I was just so embarrassed. I was just so embarrassed about it because of the fact that, like, you know, I really thought I had a clue, and I have to consider that one day I may listen to this recording and be so embarrassed about it as well, you know. But that's growth. That's the painful growth that I'm willing to trade for the miserable life I once lived, the miserable, defeated life, you know. I was just always something coming up. There was always something. About the time I get out of debt, something else was happening. I don't miss any of that. My day is, what am I going to do, you know, and who do I get to pray for today? Who do I get to help, you know, and how can I help? There's a motivation in me that is connected to be alive rather than just waiting to die, you know. And it's kind of funny how this would even happen, this experience today, because, you know, I wasn't expecting, you know, that I would get the honor to speak again so soon, you know. And then, you know, I kind of felt like I got chosen, you know, for, you know, it being a very honorable thing, you know. And then yet, still, after all this hard work and my recovery, my inclination is still I still sense the fear, you know. And so I break out my things that help me feel secure, and they help. You know, I've learned that whenever I feel insecure, defeated, shamed, that, you know, there's a higher power that I have that will help me overcome my lower nature to want to die, to be obsessed, to have an allergy to life, you know, because without it, I accept this. I accept that without this higher power working on my behalf to help me to overcome my lower nature, I'm always going to be stuck in it. I'm never going to hear my name when it's time to leave this world and go into the next. Before, I didn't even know that I wanted to. I didn't, you know, it was just, there's a big difference between who I am today versus who I was then. You know, then I was a people pleaser. I wanted to be liked. And then, you know, when I slid down the scale, you know, I experienced this hopelessness and this sense of just impending doom, and I stayed in it for so long that it became my normal, and it affected everyone that was around me, you know. And one of the things that keeps me strong and keeps me walking, because, you know, today the my walk has evolved to a day-by-day sobriety, accountability, you know. It was funny because when I started the walk in April 24th of 2016, and we were going to get to and walk onto the Lincoln Memorial on July 15th of 2016, so about 3 months later, I just knew that as soon as we get there, I'm going to have my drink, you know. I'll have done what I needed to do, because that's the way I always looked at all ceremonies, was just a, you know, a period of time. Can you do this while you're going to stomp dance, or while you're practicing your cultural ceremonies? And, you know, you've got to make sure you don't drink 4 days before or whatever. You know, I've heard a lot of different things. But, you know, what I learned on the walk was that this is a walk that you don't just go and stop or at these events or ceremonies, and that you just do a talk. But we're living in a, I see that we're living in a day that our children, our communities, the ones that are hurting because they've lost someone to alcoholism or addiction, you know, there's an action that we have to take, you know, and us becoming willing to take that action is what that walk group represents to me today, because, you know, halfway through that walk, Dennis Banks told me, you know, he called my name and wanted me to come back the next year. And the little girl inside of me was like, yes, pick me. He picked me, you know. And I knew that then it was like, oh, that means you can't, you don't get to drink till next year. And you know what? I was okay with that. And that's what happened, you know. It was just by piecemeal that I learned. It was kind of like the same way as when I set out of my home at the age of 16 to the time that I got back to my home, the very bedroom, 25 years later, I had become the person I needed to be, that when I left that room and moved into my home where I could be successful and happy and secure and have all the things that I need to have a good life. And, you know, with the gift of recovery, with the gift of connection, being connected, you know, the gift of favor I see is on me and or with me. I see so many different gifts that are umbrellaed under the gift of recovery. And I know that as long as I don't take a drink or a drug, I can have this and I can stay connected. And, you know, what I'm finding today is that most people, just as I wasn't unique about my disease, I'm finding that most people are also drawn to recovery while practicing their culture. We had an event here on April 10th, and we just made a flyer, and then we cooked some food, and we did a rise for recovery walk, rising for recovery walk, and then we, you know, talked about tobacco ties and how tobacco is sacred and related to our recovery. And then we, I happened to have some tobacco seeds from the longest walk, and so we sent everyone that was there got to plant their tobacco seeds. And then we had a water ceremony, and an elder, she led that, and they were able to, all the water that we had gathered together and poured into one big bucket, you know, everybody was walking through and watering their plants with it. And, you know, these little things like this, these little practices, I have found in the Native community to be so beneficial. And then giving them a choice, because ultimately when I think about my story, I think about the Dawn then that didn't have a choice, did not have a choice. And that's what it was. That's exactly what it was. But now with this gift of recovery, the gift of being connected, I can sense, you know, that, you know, even if I have too much coffee, this is not good, and I don't want it, you know. I had a surgery a couple of years ago, and for the first time, because of the recovery, I asked for, you know, no opioids, no, you know, and they gave me an aromatic pod to smell that is, you know, proven to help with pain, and it worked. You know, I had really bad allergies, especially after Standing Rock, and I still do. But I learned to use a diffuser with these natural oils that, you know, diffuse in the air. And when I need calming, I know what to do. See, before, when all of these traumas were happening, I'm getting out of jail and I come home to an empty house. I didn't know what to do, but I didn't think I needed recovery. And there was no one to help. So, you know, I didn't know what to do. But the Dawn who I am today was able to have a bad night last night or the night before and struggle with that soberly and without causing any of my character defects to get the best of me. And I knew exactly what I needed to do the next morning to get me right back where I needed to be in the flow of this good energy that I now know and that I have come to love so much, because becoming willing to walk it out when in doubt, you know, was a big lesson. Because when things got tough for me, I got going, you know. And now, you know, the things that used to baffle me, I intuitively know, you know, the promises come into life for me. It's so much more. It's like heaven on earth. It really is. And I just feel at times when I feel the most gratitude, I just think how much I don't deserve this. You know, there's a lot of people that did a lot less stuff that is incarcerated right now. And when I think about that, it prompts me to pray for them. It prompts me to think about, you know, those that didn't know they had a choice. And it also makes me think about all of those that are still suffering, not knowing that they have choice. And, you know, I guess the fire was lit in me, in my soul along the way on that walk. Even when my physical body couldn't go on the walk, I stayed connected. I did whatever it took, fully intending to walk on to the Lincoln Memorial on July 15th of 2020, you know. But such is life on life, you know, as is life on life's turn. You know, there was the COVID, and that was that walk, doing a walk like that would have been just very dangerous. And I left it like that in my head, was that this was for the best anyway. But, you know, I learned to do this walk. I learned to practice this walk spiritually when we would be walking into a place and I wasn't there physically. You know, I learned to keep myself present wherever they were so that I could be of value to my team. I don't miss the days when it was just I and my, you know. I feel like I have been forged from a fire, you know, and that I truly am created with a community sense of belonging, and that I am only as healthy as the sickest one in my community. And so because of that, we've had this event and teaching people these cultural practices, and it's so beautiful just to see these spirits, these energies lighting up right before, and it's feeling this connectedness, you know, and to watch this, it's the greatest beautiful thing. I compare it to watching a flower bloom. And we planted this tobacco, so people's tobaccos are sprouting and growing, and we've been sharing that, you know. And, you know, that's tapping into some of those, you know, we've identified the problem that we have intergenerational traumas. We know that we have been victims of childhood traumas, and that was passed down, you know, from generation to generation, and that's what intergenerational trauma is. And knowing that, being able to forgive my parents, you know, which is what leads me to the next meeting that I went to yesterday evening, which was the Wellbriety meeting. And the topic for the talking circle was forgiveness. you know, and when it was my turn, I spoke twice, and the first time was about how when my life started changing was when I forgave my dad. When I forgave my, I had no idea how much resentment I was holding toward him and how much trouble it caused my life. I never knew until I did it, even though I didn't really want to do it. I made myself do it, and I benefited from it. And then the second time was that my son is getting ready to graduate from the university here with his bachelor's degree in psychology. And, you know, I wasn't there. 5 years ago, you know, he graduated from high school. I couldn't go. I wasn't there. I couldn't bring myself to face family, the shame I felt for not being there, being a better mom and all of that, you know. By this time, I had been so defeated that, you know, I just couldn't bear to show my face, you know. And so I got to talk about how I have to forgive myself. And this is something that, you know, yesterday is pretty much my past 5 years in a nutshell, you know, is that am I willing to keep on doing the right thing until, you know, by the time after the sobriety meeting and I got the errands I needed to get done, I was so relieved. I felt so much relief. And it was comparable to what I used to feel a long time ago when I sought it in harmful ways. And it wasn't always with drugs and alcohol. It was sometimes with food. It was sometimes with men. It was sometimes just reckless behavior, no matter what it was, because that wasn't the point. It was a desire to be unhealthy. And so, you know, I'm here today speaking about this because I have so much passion, because I know I'm not unique. I know that there are so many single mothers that are struggling. And, you know, I'm always inspired by the ones who are in the groups and they're telling about it, because I was that one that was struggling, not knowing I had a choice, and just dealing with it on my own for so long. Like I had said on the walk, when women would tell me these stories that they've never told before, they had been living with it for so long. And to see after they tell me, or after they spoke about it in a circle, to see them almost instantly look 5 years younger was just amazing to me. It was just amazing. And that's the luster for me. That's the luster for me. I grew up mangled, maimed, little limp. I couldn't talk right. I got laughed at a lot. You know, I never felt good enough. My best just always felt like it was never good enough. And, you know, I'm not unique in that. I know that today. But I was so wrapped up my self-pity, my self-seeking and selfishness, that all I could see and feel and hear was what I was looking at and touching and listening to. And those are usually the wrong voices in me. So the right voices, it tells me that I'm loved and that I have a purpose and that I'm here for a reason, and that, you know, there's so many good things ahead of me I just wouldn't be able to even comprehend. And, you know, I can't even fathom that, but just feeling that, just just hearing that on the inside of my head rather than those nasty, hateful voices that I've heard for so long. I'll take that trade. I'll take that trade in a heartbeat. You know, there was a time that I just celebrated, we just celebrated our 5-year sobriety birthday, you know, from when we started the walk. And here we're walking, and only now this thorn that we started out being is now a bush, a rose bush, and it's blooming in different places. And, you know, we're getting to see this, and we're getting to be a part of it, you know, and it's just really a beautiful thing, you know. And I, before that, I celebrated my belly button birthday, and I would celebrate that for the week before and the week after. Well, I did the same thing this time, but everything was recovery. I got to speak on my belly button birthday, and then after that was something. We got ready for the, oh, that was when we had our event, which had about almost 70 people come, and it was just really radically just a great experience to be there. It was so much more than the best high that I ever had. It was so much more exciting. And it was even funny because I've looked at myself in the pictures and stuff, and usually I would want to hide them if I didn't get my right angle or whatever. But, you know, when I'm doing this stuff, I don't even care. I just, you know, I've lost so many people along the way these past 5 years to drugs and alcohol. And I'm desperate. I'm desperate to share this message of recovery. I have made a promise to each and every person that doesn't have a voice. You know, I walked and walked for suicide prevention, and I always put on my sticker for the silent sufferer, because a silent sufferer is a person just like me. And, you know, if I could share my story and it just maybe touch one person's heart and help them in any way, you know, then it's all worth it. And I'm just grateful to be of service and of value, of something that I'm happy to talk about. I'm happy to talk about my life today, because, you know, 5 years ago, I was ashamed. And I didn't know that this life here was even possible for the likes of me. You know, and here there's people that love me and respect me, and they know my name, and they're not saying, oh, her, you know. I'm just really grateful that I had the courage, even though when it looked all wrong and it felt all wrong, like I needed to be home, you know, I decided to do this different thing, and that was to take the time for my self-care so that I could learn forgiveness, real forgiveness, what real forgiveness is. Forgiveness for everybody that's done me wrong, forgiveness for myself, for everyone I've done wrong, you know. And I've learned that for me, whenever I'm investing into this spiritual development, that I know that any pain that I endure from it is far less than any pain I endured or my family has endured from my illness. And I'm really grateful for all of the crazy experiences that I've had, like when I first experienced those 54 days of depression on the couch, not answering the phone, not answering the door, living on crackers and peanut butter, just because I was so miserable. And then I prayed. And then that very next day, I'm being taken to an AA meeting. And I didn't even think I needed to be there. But I got something from that. And I'm really grateful for the promises always materializing in my life. As long as I stay this course, I know and fully trust that they always will, because I've seen too much. I've seen some crazy, crazy things. And that's what's so funny about my story, is because learning to trust myself has been the result of my recovery. It is another benefit my recovery because I could never trust myself. I remember there was a time when I would just be trying to order something off a menu, and if there was too much stuff, I would just start just breaking down, crying, just because I was too overwhelmed. You know, I haven't been overwhelmed by life, and I don't even know. Before the walk, it was before the walk, in a way where I felt perplexed that I needed to cope. You know, today I feel so happy that, you know, when I get waylaid, as I did the other day about finding about a relative passing from COVID, which is, you know, would unleash every terrorizing voice I've got inside me, you know, well, you don't want to go that, you know, they all got it or whatever, you know. You know, and it's the same because they're all drinkers too. Or they have been. And I don't know, you know, I'm going to be going up there soon and we're going to be doing a traditional Shawnee wake with them. And, you know, I don't know if anybody's going to be drinking there or not, but I just, you know, there was a time when that was, you know, hey, what are you bringing to drink, you know, and all of that. It was what we did as a family, you know, and now that, you know, we're being generational, the curse stops with me, you know. And in my family, we're a family of recovery here. All of us, I get the benefit, the beautiful benefits. It's another promise that has been materializing us, that my whole family, you know, is, we're all participating. My sister, she's got 8 years, you know, and, you know, I've got 5. And my brother, he's taught me so much of this program that has taught me to be grateful rather than hateful. And, you know, and so I understand how unique that is, because many don't have that blessing of where the whole family supports each other in recovery. But so I forgive myself. I practice self-care. I said what I said at the Wellbriety Circle yesterday so that I could speak it and leave it in front of those sacreds in the middle of that circle, that I could say this and I could leave it there, and I did. So, you know, today I benefit from that by not feeling that, you know, anxiety of, you know, I didn't go to his graduation in high school and now I don't deserve this one, you know, but instead I'm making plans to get his feather beaded, and, you know, I'm there and he loves me and I love him, and I'm just so grateful to be alive and well and get the honor of being in my family, because I've learned after all the ceremonies and walks and forgiveness ceremonies and all kinds of things that I've participated in these past 5 years, I come home to practice the ceremony of family. Since I've been back, you know, I have full support of my family now. When before, when I first came back, they wouldn't care less if I, you know, because the statistical relapse is just that great, you know, especially with meth users. So anyway, if this is speaking and doing whatever it takes is what it takes to keep this new life of recovery and connection, then I know that I have suffered enough, and I am willing to do whatever it takes. So knowing that I'm willing to do whatever it takes, then my next thing is I pray to always be a person of action. And with that said, I thank you guys for letting me be. Thank you for letting me share my story again, my strength, my hope, my experience, and I hope it has done just that.
I think you're an amazing. You're just absolutely amazing, lady. And I thank you for coming on and sharing. Wow, I just hope somebody does take something from your story, and incorporates that into their life. And to know that there is hope out there. I don't know what else to say other than, you know, I really appreciate you coming on. It was such an honor tonight to have you come on, and I hope to have you come back on again at a later date.
Absolutely. And who knows which part of the story will come out next.
Yeah.
I love it too. I am honored, and I'm just so grateful for Sober Indians. I'm really grateful for the group because, you know, it helps me stay connected to what people are doing from other places. And, you know, that's really helped me because here in Oklahoma, Indian Territory, where I live, everything's really whitewashed. And there's not really any culturalism or that cultural practice unless it is for an event or, you know, a dance or something like that. And so, you know, to apply our recovery in a cultural approach, and Sober Indians has always given me that inspiration to let me know that I'm doing a good thing, and I'm really grateful for Sober Indians.
Yeah, you and me both. You and me both. It is definitely a great group, and I'm grateful to be part of it. I love going on there every morning and just reading all that encouragement that you see every day, and then. Those that are celebrating their 5, 10, 15, 20 years,
yes.
Or even just, like, I think earlier today,
I believe it was today,
I seen one that was one day.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was going to say is that, you know, I'm always inspired or I'm reminded. One of the two, and then regardless, both of them makes me pray. And it's just, you know, especially when the COVID happened, I was completely dependent on Sober Indians and Sobriety Pathfinders that I had created for myself, for my own sanity, you know. And but Sober Indians was where I knew I could always go and get something that I needed to be encouraged with that I needed at that time. I can always count on that. It's a great deal.
Yes, absolutely. And is there anybody else that you want to give a shout out to? We're down to the last 2 minutes.
Well, I would like, let's see, there's the All Nations rally that's happening in November at the conference, and I was asked to speak there, and I was really honored because I'm getting put in the section of an old timer, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, I never even considered myself as being called something like that, you know. And but so I want to give a shout out to that conference, and then the Trail of Hope conference. Without that conference, I wouldn't have been so motivated and inspired for this cultural approach as well. It was a bunch of natives that got together in Tulsa, Oklahoma, you know, and, you know, started doing the sobriety thing, you know, and I felt real connected then. And that connection, you know, I recognized it when I returned to the circle and the walk, which I would like to put out a shout out for the Longest Walk 5 for all the banks, for all of the participants, for all of the family that we became grudgingly and trudgingly. And then I would also like to do a shout out for Peaceful Warrior Way, which is a local group that just started here in town, and they're the ones that's taking on the responsibility of providing a sobriety group here in town once a week, every Tuesday at 3:30. And then, of course, Sober Squad Oklahoma, that's our activities group. And we're on a mission to make sober the new cool, you know. And so it's going great, better than I could have ever expected. And I'm just grateful to be a part of it.
Well, that sounds amazing. And please let us know how those conferences go when you do those, because I think it's going to be vital to share that if you want.
Okay.
But anyway.
I'll share it on the group.
Okay. All right. Thank you. But thank you for coming on. You have a great night. And we will conclude the show.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.